Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Songwriters on Process podcast. My name is Benno Papari, and since 2010, I've run the Songwriters on Process website, where you can find more than 200 conversations with songwriters about the creative process. I'm not here to talk about tour stories, band drama, how a band got its name, or favorite foods. My goal is to treat songwriters as writers, plain and simple. This is an intelligent conversation about the writing process between two writers. And this week's interview is with Matt Nathanson and Butch Walker. This is the third time I've interviewed Nathanson. The first one was about 10 years ago. And last year, I did a joint interview with Nathanson and Julian Baker. Turns out they are big fans of each other's work. And I found out somehow that they were big fans of each other, got them together, and they talked. That episode is on the podcast, so check it out. I love my Matt Nathanson interviews because they're easy. I ask one question and let him talk. He is so prolific and has so much to say that I just kind of ask a question and sit back. And someone actually made that comment one on YouTube, the video version of the Julian Baker Matt Nathanson interview. And the guy said, geez, what a rough job you have. You ask one question, go get a cup of coffee, and that's it. So, as you'll hear, between the two of them, this is about an hour long. I think I maybe talked in total for a minute and a half, but that's fine. You're not here to listen to me. You're here to listen to those guys. I mean, Butch Walker is producer extraordinary. He's worked with everyone from Taylor Swift and Fall Out Boy and Pink and you name it. So his history is long and impeccable. And so listening to those two talk. Now, I actually, let me back up a step. Why I even got them together in the first place? Walker produced Nathanson's latest album, Boston Accent. And so this was a discussion about really a couple of things. And you'll hear Nathanson and I just talk together for maybe the first half, and then Walker comes in the second half. So they both talk about their individual creative process. And then they talk about their process working together. And what you're going to hear, you know, with Nathanson, I think I always give his whatever he says a couple of listens because he says so much. He has so much self-awareness. I mean, they both do, but Nathanson has so much self-awareness of his strengths, his limitations, his weaknesses. We should all be that well-informed about ourselves. But what I love about their process is they realize what each other does well and doesn't do well. And it's extremely complimentary. I mean, I think Nathanson says at one point, actually many times, that he didn't come in with a vision, a strict vision of what he wanted it to be, a general vision, but not a strict vision. And Walker does have a vision. And Walker says, you know, it's not easy. If two people have a vision, it's hard to work together. But Nathanson, not as much as Walker. And so because of that, it was like this perfect relationship. And you can hear it in the way they talk to each other. And they've worked together in the past. This is not the first time they've worked together. But I think what I really took away from this was how they recognized what the other one does well and doesn't do as well. And so the other one filled in the gaps. And it was just perfect harmony. And you'll hear that in the way they talk about it. But so this was a lot of fun listening to both of these guys talk about what they do and, again, kind of solo in their process, but also together. And so with that, here's my interview with Butch Walker and Matt Nathanson. All right, let's get started. So I love the new album.
No, thanks.
And so I guess my first question is when you're writing about, you know, times in the past, how do you go back to those places? Because I've heard varying, you know, I interviewed David Bazan a couple of years ago and he said he literally drove those same streets, you know, to get ideas for when writing about the past. But when you're writing about the past, how do you go back to those places to then you can write songs about them, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I feel like up until really recently, I've lived pretty strongly in the past. So it was pretty easy to go back. I mean, it was just sort of like right there. You know, specifically German Cars and Boston Accent. You know, I co-wrote Boston Accent with Donovan Woods. And, but it was, I had the title, I had the idea. I was like, I want this thing where it's this crazy thing that happens every time I'm around people from Massachusetts. If I hear even the hint of a Boston accent, I automatically feel like a kinship. And so I think at that point, I'd just been living so severely in the past. And I was processing a lot of stuff that I ended up processing a lot more through the pandemic, actually. So a lot of this, most of this record was written before the pandemic, and started, Butch and I started to record a couple weeks before everything shut down. And so, yeah, I was just kind of accessing the deterioration of my relationship with my mother, was sort of reaching its peak. We hadn't spoken in a long time, but she was sick, and I was sort of processing that independently of her. And so, I just think a lot of therapy and a lot of working through stuff led to this place now that I'm in, where I feel like I'm not necessarily living in the past at all. So I feel like I hesitate to say like, this was the thing that, you know, but it felt like this was the shit that was lodged in the colon, you know what I mean? Like, this was the shit of the past. And yeah. I just sort of like, and you know, I've never processed being from Massachusetts. I've never made a record that sounds like a singer-songwriter record. I've always been like, I'm from San Francisco. Like, I'm a pop, I can do that. I'm this guy, I'm this person. And this record sort of coincided with me really coming to terms with the fact that I'm me, and that the things that make the individual strong and powerful in a cool way, are the fucked up, weird, unique fingerprints that we all have, that we sort of try and find our way out of, right? Like, I grew up in Massachusetts. I've never wanted to be a part of a team. I've never wanted to be seen as somebody who aligns themselves with people just because of a thing, just like, oh, we share this thing. Like, I'm a U2 fanatic. I don't want to fucking hang out with other U2 fanatics. Like, I like talking to them about stuff, but I would never be like, I would like wear a badge. Not that I'm not throwing shade. It's just like, as a kid growing up, when you identified strongly with something, it was a great way for people to dismiss you. And as a kid, I was dismissed pretty much outright by my family. Whether they want to admit it or not. You know, I was put in boarding school early. I was put in camp for like months at a time. And it was like, I just didn't have a family. And so the last thing I wanted to do was to be able to be identified by any specific thing that people could be like, oh, he's into heavy metal, or he's a folk guy. It's like, to me, I was like, I'm everything. I love Indigo Girls. I love Slayer. And it was like, and I refused to find allegiance with anybody. And so as I got older, I realized like, well, fuck, I'm from Massachusetts. Like, and there's a very specific thing that happens when you're watching Good Will Hunting, or when you're like, even in the most absurd concept, when you see a Bill Burr skit on SNL, or you see the Casey Affleck Dunkin' Donuts skit, and you're like, yeah, I know that fucking guy. You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah. And so I was starting to really come to terms with like, well, this is just part of who I am. And it's like part of my genetic makeup. And then at the same time, when we made this record, Butch, I went in, you know, I have confidence, and it comes in these like, comes in these flashes. So I'll have a mad moment of like, yeah. And I'll make notes like, yeah, you're a singer-songwriter, make a fucking singer-songwriter record. And then I get just a couple clicks away from that powerful moment. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. That's going to be, you know, it's going to be wimpy. I don't want to be a wimp. I don't like that. I got to be tougher. I got to be more popular. And so with this record, I kind of locked Butch in. Jonathan, our manager, we came up with this idea, like, look, just fucking make a singer-songwriter record. You're a singer-songwriter. And I was like, yeah, yeah, that's it. And then I kind of locked Butch into this thing, and then found a 2-year-plus hiatus from recording it to releasing it, where I could fucking squirm my way and be like, I got to re-record this. This sucks. Like, I got to redo this. This is not good. And luckily for me, Butch is not easily, and we'll see in a sec, like, he's not the kid, you're not going to push him around. Like, at least I'm not, you know, like, I can sort of demand things, but he has his view of how he likes things done. And so that gave us some mostly amazing shit and a little bit of a rub here and there, but it made it impossible for me to overthink this, because I couldn't go back to it. I wasn't in the same, we were in lockdown. He was in fucking Los Angeles. Then he went to Nashville. It was like, all I could do was kind of squirm. So I wrote Pigeons, you know, and I was like, well, we didn't get this song. Let's re-record that one. And we had one more go of a couple days once lockdown sort of, you know, lessened. But really, it was like anybody else, I might have been able to be like, yo, I just want to re-envision this whole thing. And I had lost perspective. And I don't like when people tell me I've lost perspective. Like, I don't want any motherfucker being like, I don't think you know what you're talking about. And it's like, yeah, I fucking do, actually. But then when this record came out recently, finally, watching people respond to it and hearing it like on Spotify with the record cover, listening to the songs and hearing people's feedback, but not as much that, just hearing the songs in the out of the vacuum, I was like, son of a bitch, this is what it is. I can't believe I wanted to overthink it. And it's the thing that people seem to be drawn to most about it is like, they're like, they don't say it like this, but the idea is like, well, you don't sound like you're, my friend Joel said this to me in Los Angeles. He's like, I love all your songs, but when you're, for me, the songs that really work are the ones where you don't feel like you're trying so hard to be something. Yeah. And this record, like, truly, because of the speed at which Butch works, and then the fact that we were on the back of a fucking pandemic, like we had many more weeks to go, and then we ended up doing it remotely, and it ended up being where I couldn't exert myself on the situation as much. And so I don't know if I'd ever want to make a record like this again, but like it yielded a record where the performances were what they were. Butch had made a record with Ryan Adams, and the whole thing was like one or two takes, you know, and then it's like, that's it. We're going to build around that. That's it. That's great. That's your, and I don't subscribe to that. Like, I love, and so does Butch. Butch loves Steely Dan. He loves Def Leppard. He loves U2. You know what I mean? But like, here we were applying one, the Neil Young method, right? And I think if I'd had time, energy, and if Butch had been more malleable, I think I would have, you know, the shape of this record would be significantly different. So from that perspective, as a learning curve, it was steep. Like, it was like, and it didn't re, it was steep and long. I, you know, 2.5 years, I had no idea if anybody was going to give a shit about it.
How much revising did you do to the words, actually?
So the lyrics and the songs themselves went through a pretty rigorous, that I think is a place to really overthink.
Yeah.
Because it's like, because you can always go back to what it was, but you can sort of punch it up and punch holes in it and see what does and doesn't work. It ends up taking a long time. So a song like German Cars, there's a part in the middle eight that's my favorite lyric on the whole in my life, I think, that says, and we hated the way everybody talked about their father's money and their summer jobs, princes and princesses trying to get lost in German cars that their parents bought. That lyric was done like 4 years ago with the fucking, that melody. And then I, up until the night before I recorded it, I didn't have a second verse and I didn't have a second half of the middle eight. So I was like trying hard. And finally, I just took a day off of the studio and I said, Butch, I got to go do this. And I went to the hotel and I just sat with my recording gear and I just sang over the track over and over again until all of a sudden my favorite, like the, to me, the second half of that is the most heartbreaking part, like where it says, you know, and in the fade, in the glow of the summer light, you asked me if I had ever felt the pressure to get everything right, to stay the mess. To swim the mess, to stay the course, to be someone that they adore. And it was like, to me, that's the heart and soul of that lyric, because nothing has spoken more about my relationship with my mother and father than that bit that was written like the night before. And then there's the other verse in that song too, you know, came last minute, and it was really great. There's also a lyric in Pictures that came the night before. Like that I think is my favorite lyric. That's like, you know, people think darkness and light are opposite sides. People think darkness and light are opposite sides, but you and I know they're the same. And it's like, I wrote that. And I don't think that, you know, I get good lyrics overthinking, but really good shit that kind of ends up being the essence of the thing shows up. And the less you molest it and move it around, at least in my experience on this record, the better, you know, it is.
So when those happen last minute, then, and you know they happen last minute, you go, oh, that's a last minute lyric and those are the best, I'm not going to touch it.
Well, you can't. So you get up against a wall. And so, and that, I don't like being up against a wall at all. Like, I'm not the person, if I'm forced to do something, I have a lot more to overcome than just doing it, right? I'm much better at like parsing things out into chunks. But lyrics, it's really hard. They're really a place where you can just fucking drive yourself insane trying to move an and a But and I've had just as much success with lyrics that I've overthought as I have with lyrics I've underthought. But there's no pattern. It's not like I can depend. It's, and so sometimes it really works. And sometimes last minute I'm fucked and I put a lyric in and I'm like, well, it's going to have to do. This record, there were so few of those, thankfully, that it was like I ended up kind of nailing those ones. Thank you. Know, it was like, oh, God. All right, great. That's great. We're done. So anyway, but like Come On Get Higher, for example, that whole album, the Some Mad Hope album, those lyrics were fucking not done. It took me years to like finish those songs by listening to the tracks and being like we got the bed tracks done years before I finished the lyrics. And I was always like, that's the way Bono does it. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, this is my problem of being a nerd is like reading all these books about my heroes. You sort of adapt the parts that work for you, even if they don't work for you. So I'm like, it's like, well, that's what Bono does. Like they just throw paint and then he fucking, and there is something to that, right? Like the Paul Simon method is, well, he's got many methods, but that's a different way. You know, the Dylan method is a different way. The U2 method is fun. Like you're playing off the band, you're, and Some Mad Hope record is me playing off the track and Come On Get Higher emerged, that lyric, like emerged Come On Get Higher from me driving around in a rental car, listening on a CDR of the track. I don't think I ever would have written Come On Get Higher, you know, that line in a normal way. Detroit Waves is another one where it's like Detroit Waves, good night, spread out beneath me now. If I could, believe me, I would. I would have never written something that worked in that way if I hadn't been sort of trying for a year and a half to be like, what fits in this melody that I have? You know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's that I wish there was a rhyme or reason to it because it would be so nice to have a fucking guarantee.
Yeah. But
there's none, you know, none.
I was at the, took our daughter to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I was there last week and they have those, I love the handwritten lyric sheets. Oh. And they have Billy Joel's Big Shot up there. And what I'm fascinated by is when a word gets crossed out and they put something else there. And he had the lyric, when you wake up in the morning with your head on fire. And the original lyric was when you wake up in the morning with your mouth on fire. And he crossed out mouth and he had head. And I thought, I wonder, like, what was it about mouth that he didn't like? I was fascinated. Just that's the only word I think in the song that he changed.
So not to mention, and Billy Joel's a fucking genius. So, but not to mention that, like, I would live to cross out one fucking word. You know what I mean? Like I literally have like my notebook looks like a chicken ran across the thing with like, you know, with pens on its feet. And it's like, and so I always wonder when I see those like Pete Townsend's lyrics for like, you know, Baba O'Reilly. And it's like, really? Did Pete fucking, was he that confident that he just shit all these lyrics out in this handwriting that's beautiful? And then he crossed out a couple things. But so Billy Joel, though, is sort of a genius. So I wouldn't doubt if he just sat down and did this and was like, yeah, mouth feels weird. And he's so musical that his thing might come from, it just doesn't sit right, you know?
Right.
And I'm not musical. Like, I don't even know chords. I don't even know melody, how it works. I'm taking piano lessons finally to like figure out how things work. And Billy Joel is so musical that that's why his songs are so impactful, because they're in the structure of the song. He can change a chord underneath that will support a lyric that will support that's outside of my jurisdiction. That's outside of my expertise at this point in the game. I luck into it, but like, I'm sure Billy Joel's like, oh yeah, that doesn't sing as well, actually.
And right.
Like I was sleeping with a model and she told me mouth doesn't sound as good.
Right. Right. So I forgot if I interviewed Daniel Lanois before or after we talked last, but I interviewed Daniel Lanois and he had mentioned kind of what your, he said he's not a linear songwriter at all. So he said all of his lyrics are on 11 by 22 art paper and there's thought bubbles and lines and arrows and there's nothing linear in any part of the process. If you saw that piece of paper, all you would see are scribbles, thought bubbles, lines, arrows, all that stuff. So
I have that in my book. Yeah, that's what I do. Like, thankfully. Yeah. But Lanois also, did he talk about how production-wise, he and Eno, they make detailed notes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's impressive to see like what they, the logs that they keep of like, well, that was a great, that second half of that was a great, whatever they write. Lanois is a fucking master. Like he is so, he's so good. So good. And what I love about him is that when he creates, he's so talented. Butch is a similar Butch is a genius. And like, I've worked with a couple geniuses in my life. Mike Viola's a genius. Butch Walker's a genius. To see Butch be liquid around instruments, it's like, I'm assuming what it's like to be in a room with Lanois where he's like, oh, hold on. And then he plays right. it. And not only does he play it, but the tone is incredible. And it's coming from his fingers and the amp and the guitar. It's like Butch has got a similar trip where it's like everything he does just works. So if Butch nails a song, it's amazing. If he doesn't nail a song, you have a really hard time backing out of the thing he's done because it's so fucking good that you're like, well, it's not right. It's not how I saw it, but it's fucking great. And so yeah. I don't know how we, and Lanois, I feel like, is the same way. It's like, I don't know how you back out of a Lanois thing. It's like, luckily Lanois works with a lot of other great players. So there's motion happening in that way. And when Butch and I made this record, it was just he and I. So it was a different thing. I bet in an environment, second go round, we had players and he could kind of manipulate them a little bit, but Butch really can work as like a solo human. Yeah. And then he just sort of grabs things and does things. And in that way, he's like Lanois.
But I'm looking at my notepad here and I wish I were linear, but I'm not. And I write things down and I think, oh, that'll make sense later. And it doesn't. It drives me crazy. But does that bother you at all to have all that stuff all over the place on a piece of paper?
No, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that I can't. The part that bothers me is that when things are exciting, I bail. So like if
you
things start
mentioned that before. Yeah.
So if things start getting good, I'm like, let me take a break. Let me go take a piss. Let me get some water and I'll come back because it's so terrifying. It's like the best way I can equate it to is like sex. Like when you have sex with somebody that you don't really know and you're like exploring each other's thing. I've had a couple moments in my life, more than a couple, but where I've had sexual experiences with people and it's like the most erotic paint throwing experience I've ever had. And it's like, but I have to do it with somebody, you know, it doesn't happen when I masturbate, you know, it's like, I mean, it can, but it's not nearly as successful. There always has to be another human because I'm a performer and I get inspired by somebody else. And so when that chemistry happens, there's like this really great moment where it's like, I'm scared, but you want me to put my finger where? Okay. Like, or I'm scared. You want me to dress up how? Like, okay, let's do that. You know what I mean? Like, but you can do it because you're like in this simpatico thing that's like occurring, this like organic rolling experience. So when I'm writing with people, it's like, it's so much different than sex, but it's so similar to sex. But like, I'm not trying to, I can pull the plug at any point in that situation and be like, hold on, let's get lunch. And, you know, sometimes Sean Douglas, when we write songs, the first couple we wrote, when you're not super comfortable with the person and you can kind of, roll with it and they're like, well, this is great. And you want to stop, but you're like, I don't want to bum them out. And I want to sort of be awesome in the situation. And I want to fucking step up and I'm having fun. You can get over it. But the more comfortable I get, the less exploratory I want to be in the moment of I can be exploratory, but like on my own terms, like, okay, I'm going back in, but I'm going in with a harness and I'm going, you know, in a light. And it's like, Butch doesn't work like that at all. Butch works completely intuitively in a way where like, you can't actually stop him and you can't actually, it's like, it's detrimental to the process. If you say like, hey man, you know what, that thing you do, he's like, dude, let me just, and then it's like watching somebody do this thing. And that's a terrifying place to be. And I don't think I'm a particularly good judge of the end result because of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, I just think I'm scared and it's outside of my bounds. And I'm like, wait a second. But at the same time, it's better than it is when you do it by yourself. I don't know if this all ties back in.
Hemingway would always stop writing when he knew he had something good to say because he didn't want to start the next day with nothing. No, nothing. You know, he wanted to start the next day with the well full. So he'd always stop when he had something great to say. So I guess when I write, I'm the same way because when I know I have something good, I stop because I know that, oh, I've got something to look forward to later.
I like that, but.
And I'm terrified of writing that good thing going, oh shit, now where do I go? And so for me, it's, I'm the same way you are, but I stop for different reasons. Cause I just, I want to feel like I have something to look forward to.
Oh, I like that. For me, I oftentimes the first thing is just way better. So if I record things into my phone, I don't listen to them and I just let them go. And then like 4 days later, I'll be on a plane and I'll just go through and I'll just listen to stuff. And sometimes it's so unbelievably better than any, it's like, because creating art is not about knowing what you're, I think creating greatness is not about knowing what you're doing. It's like God walks through the room, that sort of saying. It's like, there is a thing that like, it comes through you. And there's very egotistical, and Hemingway was an incredible writer, but did not lack ego, you know, but like, I don't know why he, but the idea is like, we think we can control shit. We yeah. think that like, we can make it, we can start and stop this at any time, which is yeah. such a fucking douchebag way to see right. anything. Because it's like, it's happening. And like, just like with sex, you would never in a million years be like, this is great, but like, should we go to dinner? You know what I mean? It's like, right. like, should we take a second and like, put your pants on and let's go to dinner. It's like, no, dude, you fucking roll with it. And like, but the ego is so wants control.
Yeah.
That it's like, and that's where the great shit happens. So I haven't quite figured it out, but as I get older, it gets to be, and it ties into Boston Accent, the album. The more I realize who I am and the more I surrender to the fact that it is who I am, big nose, you know, fucking, you name it, like any small thing and big thing. And like, the more I accept who I am, I love singer-songwriters. I really love playing the acoustic guitar. I love the way it resonates. I love the way it feels on my body. I love the way it feels when I sing. Like, if I just do that, then that's a great starting point for everything else. And surrendering to the self at whatever stage you're at. And then from there, you can find greatness. If you're denying the self the whole time, then there's just no fucking way you're going to make anything happen that's worthwhile. It's like building a house on sand.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you about your phone, because I'm fascinated by, you know, all of you songwriters have hundreds of voice memos. Oh, and Jesus. I ask, like, how do you go back to them? Is there any organizing principle? Like, most of you guys just don't and just go listen to and say, where's that one I did 2 months ago? But the rare one actually will organize them with some thematic. What do you do in that? I'm fascinated by that.
But what I do is I put, first of all, someone could make $1 million if they fucking had a better organized thing than voice notes. So I put hearts and okay. So when I listen through, if it's good, I'll put a heart and a note. So I'll listen to like 10 or 15 of these at a time, put a heart and be like 1:30, it gets real good. And then the more I listen to it, the more it becomes part of who I am and the more I can go to it when I'm just picking up the guitar. And so, yeah, I put hearts on the good stuff. And then the rest of it is like literally a fucking shit show of like dates.
But there's no, so you do have a note, like at least it will identify it somehow then.
Well, yeah. And then what I can do is search heart and then all the good shit shows up.
So do you get a lot of those ideas? I guess I forgot if we talked about this last time, if I mentioned to you the Salvador Dali study that I read. So you'll love this. There was a study done about a year ago, and they found that the period right before you fall asleep. So there's a term for it. I always forget what it is, but it's a term before you fall asleep, you're kind of in that hazy state. So what Salvador Dali would do is he would sit in an uncomfortable chair with a skeleton key in his hand and his arm outstretched and a saucer on the floor underneath his hand. When he'd drift off, he'd let go of the key. It would make a noise. He'd wake up. He'd start painting. Oh. And so they found that, and they've done this. They replicated this somehow in the lab with creatives and found that that was a fruitful time. So I'm curious if you've ever had moments like that.
1,000%.
Not in the middle of the night, but in that kind of haze.
Well, 1,000%. I journal whenever I'm in that moment and the stuff that comes out first thing in the morning. Also, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I'll just sort of journal what I'm thinking. And if I read it back the next day, it's infinitely clearer and more poetic than stuff that it just is the spot. It's like, and I think if I did drugs, that's what I would do. I'd spend my time doing drugs to lose myself. But because the losing of yourself, I'm just such a control freak that it's like impossible to access the fun shit unless I'm actively like on my way out or on my way waking up.
Yeah.
You know, before the brain has had a chance to like really convolute.
I'm just going to throw some questions out. You guys can kind of talk about the album, but I do want to start with this quote that I like to quote writers. And this is the novelist Eel Doctorow said this, and I want to apply this to songwriting. He said, writing is like driving at night. You can only see as far as the headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way. And I'm curious when you write or do, I mean, talk about maybe the album, obviously, but how much of that was about knowing where you want to end up or about just saying, let's see and see where this takes us kind of thing. Maybe Butch, start
well,
with you.
The car stalled out on the side of the road and the headlights died when Matt came to work on the record the very last time before the entire world shut down. And so we were almost, I mean, we were pretty close to the finish line.
Yeah, we had, we got about 2 weeks of real work in, and it was kind of like, oh, fuck, this is going fast. This is great. And then all
Which
of a sudden
it does usually, yeah.
Yeah. And then I was like, hey, Butch, I don't know if I'm coming back. He's like, yeah, this thing's real, but maybe a couple months. And I was like, okay. He's like, you can leave your shit. And I was like, okay.
And then you left your shit.
And then it was like,
yeah, I still have your cutlery, by the way. So, yeah. It was a weird time for everybody. It was an unprecedented once in a lifetime for a lot of people, I hope, that would ever be. And we didn't know what to do except just put everything on hold. But we had the makings of what I thought would be one of Matt's best records ever. And so, and definitely I was, you know, and a favorite of mine. So we got like, we had all the songs. I think we only added a couple of songs later. So that part felt good knowing we had a lot of the songs. Cause the songs, you know, Matt's a songwriter. So it's not like he comes in, it's not like we come in and go like, you know, oh, let's cook up a beat. And, you know, it's like, there's a song there. And so the idea and the clear vision that we had going in made the process go quickly until it didn't, which was, you know, due to the elephant in the room, but it was really, a great process over regardless, you know, even, but I kept texting him throughout the 2 years, you know, going like, man, I love this record. I keep putting it back on, you know, even when we were not quite finished with it, it was just one of those, I don't finish records. And usually it's not that I don't love them anymore. I'm just don't want to hear them for a while. Cause you've heard them, you know, I've listened to the minutia, the kick drum sound for too long. And that's why I don't mix records. Cause I would absolutely fall out of love with every record I ever did. If I had to sit there and listen to the snare drum soloed for like 7 hours and like people telling me to raise this level and lower that level. And then I would just be like, you're killing me. But that's a certain person that can handle that and do that. It's not me, but I still want to love the music. And this one, I just loved the songs, and I felt like it was some of Matt's most earnest and strongest songs. And so we set out to make it understated and not overstated. But that being said, we got to a point in where there was a fork in the road and we had to stop for a while, as we said. And you know, here we are.
It's funny, from a prep perspective, Butch really started the whole thing by saying, you know, can you make me a playlist of songs that you think you want this to kind of the vibe? And so I made a Spotify playlist of a bunch of shit and we kind of went over it. And it was like, Butch, I was talking about, it's funny, like how you say you don't like to mix but Butch mixes, like he mixes in the way that he, when it's done, it's like the painting is painted. It's like, but from the perspective of overthinking and tweaking things, like, because I said to Butch, like, do you want to just mix this? He's like, fuck no. And I was like, but it's mixed. It's like, it's fucking mixed, you know? And he'd be like, dude, I'm not going to do that. And I didn't realize until after the fact what he meant, which was like, I don't want to fucking beat this thing. Like, and Butch's like superpower. I see this record as like a duet record. Like, and I kind of always like, is it's just like, it's Butch and I, like I brought in this thing, like we'd worked before on, we wrote Different Beds, which is one of the strongest songs on my last record.
Love that song.
And we wrote, and again, like that, he reimagined that. So we had this idea, we wrote this song, and then he was like, this is the vibe I'm going for. And then all of a sudden you had this 180 on the vibe and it turned into this kind of Roxy Music thing. And all of a sudden I was like, son of a bitch. And I remember you did it like, it was like you only had two steps. It wasn't like you took 50 steps and then you were like, all of a sudden it became this thing. It's like you took two steps. You were like, yeah, I was doing that, but then I had this thought and now I did this. And I was like, that's your fucking second thought, you know? And that was the way that, that's the way that you do, you work, is like, you're an incredibly instinctual person, which is the, could not be more opposite of the way that I work. And so it's like, in that way, it was this sort of fun, sometimes not fun, mostly fun meld of like the two of us kind of doing our thing. And I was saying, Butch, like, you, it's so complete. You're so, you, the thing, your vision for things, I was talking to JD about this. It's like your vision for things is just so complete. Like when you feel confident in what you're doing, which is almost all the time, you have a start. It's like you don't have a finish. It's not like you make a John Mayer record, right? Where like John Mayer is confident, but John Mayer starts in one place and ends in the place he knows he's going to end. Like, and that's just the kind of, that's like, you might as well just make records. It's like, that's the opposite of what we want to do. It's like you follow, you roll, and then I'll let you, I don't, you roll with this thing to this finish line that maybe you don't even know what the finish line is going to be, but you're like, you are like, so, you surrender to the process of this thing that you're doing, grabbing bits here and there and doing that stuff. So that's it.
Well, I don't know. A lot of times I don't know, if I'm not confident about what I want, then it's a disaster. And that's happened on records where if there's not a clear vision and I don't have the vision for it, not to sound pompous, but it's like somebody's got to come in with a vision. And if it's not the artist, then I want to have a clear vision. But I've done records with people where there's just never a vision and it changes daily. And it's like, and a lot of times I'll get flustered and I'll give up and I won't give a good performance on my end. Whereas when we come in with like agreeing on a vision and we have something there, even if it's something like to you that it's like, oh, I didn't expect that. As long as I kind of had it in mind and it works and you hear it and go like, I like it, you know, or I love it, then the confidence just keeps building and then the train gets rolling, you know?
But there's a thing about your vision is that it's, it doesn't sound like there's, it's not like, it doesn't feel like somebody who had a vision and followed it through to the end and like dotted their I's and crossed their T's. It's like, it feels like somebody who was like, yeah, I want to get to that side of the river. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but that's where I want to go. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this time I'm going to put a jet ski together and do this. And then, you know what I mean? It's like, so songs like Type Erase on this record, where I feel like there's a couple songs that, they were like C or D songs, in my opinion. And then all of a sudden you did this thing to them and they became like, oh, fuck. Like, and Type Erase, Blush, you know, like these are songs where like, that where I was like, well, these are good songs, but they're not as strong as the obvious, like, you know, German Cars, Boston Accent, Futures Here or whatever. Like we, but for those ones, you like, you would just, it was crazy. It was like you salvaged, not only did you salvage them, but they like shine. And
that's cool.
It's really neat. Like it's a neat,
I think, you know, the bass part saved it on Type Erase. It was just insane bass playing.
Dude, it's crazy. Dude, your bass playing and your guitar playing both on that song are bananas. It's like watching somebody fall down the stairs. And then every time you fall, you make eggs. And then you fall again. And then you're on your feet. And then you like paint a picture. Then you fall again. And then you like, and then at the bottom of the stairs, you're like, what's up? I'm here.
Bloom, bloom.
It's the best.
It's fun. And yeah, that was cool to take some of those ideas of yours and just have a playground to like paint on. It was just felt good to like, to have that freedom to do that. And sometimes that doesn't work for people, but I appreciated being trusted on that, you know, cause you could easily be like, no, I'm not going to leave and come back tomorrow and see what you've done, you know, because right. That sounds crazy to a lot of people. But sometimes it's how I get in the, as our buddy Mike Viola says, get in the pain cave. I'll get in my pain cave and I'll just start like, you know, kind of it's the mad scientist thing. And being left alone in my sandbox can sometimes get good results. But it's absolutely a team effort. You know, it's like you go off and write the song and come in and then you give it to me and you play it. And then you leave and I go off and do my thing. And then you come back in the next day And that's kind of, that's a fun trade-off, you know?
Yeah. And I think we were talking about Lanois before you got on. And I think that that's like, I think that that's the part of it that Lanois was really good at too. Although, you know, you do a really good job too when you have a band and you're organized. I've never experienced it, but I've heard the records of like you orchestrating other humans. You know what I mean? But like, there's an element of like, that's the genius part. And Viola's the same way. To me, Viola's strongest moments are him in his garage. Do you know what I mean?
We're alone in our sandboxes where we have very little toys, but like we know what to do with them.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's anyone's strong suit. A lot of people, I envy people that can go from studio to studio as a producer and never stepping foot into that studio and then just getting their thing every time. I'm lost. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, like I need a little bit of that comfort of that home cooking in the studio that I'm used to.
Yeah. And that's the thing I think I was saying before you got on that I don't think I understood, how much it, like universally people have liked this record of my fan base in a way that has sort of been incredible. And also like, holy shit, is it this simple? Like, is it you write these songs and then you perform them and support them and then you put it out and people like that? Like, that's not how Achtung Baby was made, or that's not how Hysteria was made, right? This is what my brain says. And it's like, these aren't how my hero Thriller didn't get made like this. And it's like, and I understand that I'm not Michael Jackson or Def Leppard or fucking U2, very different bands, very different genres. But it was this idea that like, you have a very sympathetic way of, you have an empathetic way of supporting. And again, like it's funny because it is your vision of it. Like it's our vision, right? It was our starting vision. But like your confidence in your vision is the thing that like is what carried it to a point that it got to. That's the point that it is. It's like, that's just a fact. And I think it's because I'm a fairly, like, I definitely can be a dick and I definitely know what I want, but I'm much more of sort of like, I don't know, maybe, I mean, that could work, that maybe that, I love that, let's try it. And so I've spent my life making records where I try and I spend energy like extending in all these directions, and having you and JD who've spent your time doing that already and figured out that this is how you like to do it and that the results are much more, it's just a much more efficient, effective path than the path that, you know, I'm used to doing. And so I don't even know, you know.
Yeah, but if we would have butted heads on that vision and daily and changing our directions and stuff, we would have never gotten to the finish line, and it wouldn't have been as easy to get good results, because I've done records for people like that where, like, I go back to saying that earlier, that they're so unsure of what they want that every day the song gets redone a different way, like a whole different genre. And I'm like, this is kind of sucking the life out of me.
This is your kryptonite, I think. Like, I truly believe that, like, if you're a powerful human, and I think that if I were going to pick your kryptonite, and that's why the mixing aspect of it is so fucking like soul crushing, because it's like, you work in a moment and then the moment's gone. It's like, it's the exact opposite. I was talking about this before. Like, as soon as momentum starts happening and things start getting exciting, I was talking about fucking, like in a situation when you're fucking, when you're fucking somebody and it's awesome and they're fucking you and it's like amazing, there's this element of like, I can really surrender to that. I can like go with the fantasy. I can do things that like I would never do in other situations. I can like let go. And like, I feel like when you make when I make records, I can immediately, my brain engages and it's like, I can't fuck nearly as well as I, and I feel like your fucking is like, you do a really good job of like, that's your place. You play in the play. You have a good time playing, like exploring and throwing paint, and you do it within the confines of your own pain cage. And then it's like, and then you're like, well, that was fun. What's next? And it allows you to make records fast, and it allows you to make records, you know, just the way you do, which is like, you
know. Thank you. Yeah. Well, it's super fun to do when everybody's on the same page. It's super fun.
Yeah.
All right. So let me ask you guys this, because I think in the past couple of years, this has been something a lot of songwriters have told me because they haven't been outside. I mean, they weren't for a while. No one was. But how many song ideas, how creative they were during the mundane activities of their lives? So how many creative ideas they got when they were, I mean, I can run down a laundry list of things when people were, Keb Mo told me how many song ideas he got when he was ironing and folding clothes. I've heard vacuuming,
chopping. He's my neighbor, by the way.
Oh, is he? Okay, there
you
go.
Get over there and fucking get some shit ironed.
Right.
I can't believe he does that.
Yeah.
I mean, great. I couldn't iron an idea.
It's hilarious. He said folding clothes and doing laundry, he gets song ideas. But I've heard vacuuming is huge. I mean, I've heard people say down to the sound of the vacuum, you know, chopping vegetables, you know, there's gardening, any kind of mundane activity, something about how when the brain kind of loses itself in those moments and isn't thinking about it, that's when the ideas come. So maybe Matt, we'll start with you. Like, how does that happen often to you? You know, in those moments of mundane activities, it can be walking, even something like that, when ideas come to you.
So I walk all the time and I journal all the time. So both of those activities are fairly brainless. When I'll get on the elliptical down in my garage, or I'll go for a hike during COVID, I hiked all around my neighborhood. My neighborhood has all these stairs. And so you can hike in my little neighborhood, Bernal Heights in San Francisco, for 2 hours and never double back. When I hike, I have my, you know, I'm constantly churning out things. Same with walking, same with exercising. The brain is the enemy, but then the brain is also not the enemy, because the brain is the place where fun shit occurs, like as a creative. But being able, there's a thing that Butch does that I envy, which is like, and I don't know how it works, and I'd like to bottle it. It's like he can get up in the morning and ride his fucking motorcycle from, you know, the Palisades or wherever to his studio, and come in and like make a cup of coffee and then shut the door and like focus. Like, which is funny, because people would say if they met you, Butch, that like we are scatterbrained humans, right? Like they'd be like, oh, they talk about this, then they go to this, then they move to this, then it's like that's how our brains work. And we, when we do it, that's why we're funny to each other, because because nobody else can keep up. We'll be like, and Viola can keep up. Like there's certain people, you know, and like, but most people are like, what the fuck are those idiots talking about? But then the thing that you do really well is like, and I've never, it's like, you just, all of a sudden you go in there and you like close the world out and you're able to like focus on something, and then you're able to bring a result. And then you're like, great, I'm going to go to lunch. And then you're like, it's done, come on over. That's just not even in my fucking, like that kind of, I wouldn't even call it laser. It's like you have a regimented ability to like close the world out. And I need to hear about it, because I think it's like, it's a superpower.
Well, I don't think, thank you, but I don't think it's really different from a lot of people that produce records. I'm more lucid in the mornings. I can tell you that. I'm more creative in the mornings. I don't know why. I'm not a night owl. I definitely was as a, you know, 20 something, but I mean, let's be real. You know, I mean, I'm 52 and I have a family. So it's like, I don't want to be up till 5 a.m. and I'm not. I'm up at 5 a.m. and that is the difference. But like, definitely my brain will wake me up with ideas all the time. I'm just like, I'll wake up and be, I don't know what it is that makes it do that, but I definitely do that. And then, so I'll kind of, you know, I'll have ideas, I'll chat, I'll write it down, or I'll put it in my phone if it's a melody, or I'll write it down in a note. And then when I go into the studio, that's when I can start kind of piecing it all together, just because of being able to work that. This is the 10,000 hours of, since I was a kid, being able to, you know, mic and record and, you know, manipulate sound and everything. And play enough, I guess, jack of all trades. I can play enough on each instrument that I can get the idea down. But after years of being able to kind of hone in a song by doing, you know, building a track, drums, bass, guitar, keys, vocal. That really, that part is not the hard part. It's the hard part is having go back to the thing we talked about, having the vision for it, having the blueprint of what the song is going to be or the sound of it. And I think that's also, it's like, it's no reason you couldn't be an incredible producer if you would have put in the 10,000 hours differently than you did. You put it in different aspects of being an artist, which is awesome, which is the singing and the songwriting and the performing, all that. I when I did it on this, it just makes it easier to come in. I'm not saying it's easy because there's plenty of misses, but sometimes they'll hit. And that is coming in and being able to go, well, and I'm sorry, I got scattered. But what I mean is, because you were talking about earlier, our brains are firing like that and going fast from subject to subject. It's the reason why we do that is because we both are these little weird encyclopedias of rock knowledge and music, because we grew up immersed in it. We grew up like junkies for the credits on the back of the albums and who played what on them. And then, paying attention to the details of them. And also I had two older sisters, so my record collection was what their records were. So it was all over the map. So when somebody comes in and has this idea that sounds like ABBA, I already know how they made those records.
Yeah.
And I'm not bragging. It's like, I didn't have much of a social life as a child because of it. So yep. It's like, But when somebody says, oh, well, what if we want to get this fucking Phil Collins drum thing on the, oh, I know exactly how Hugh Padgham did that. He used a gated reverb and he gated the talkback mic and blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And like, and now basically I already know how to get it. So part of the battle is that, like, I don't think 20 years ago I would have been able to get results as quick and all often as successfully as I can and hopefully do now. Due to just doing it all the time.
But having
the knowledge in the back of our heads of all these different genres and all the different ways that guitar, I mean, I played in every kind of band and had every kind of guitar sound and guitar and amp growing up and keyboard. So that being said, when you hear something and somebody references something, I'm like, oh, I already know what that is. I already know exactly what keyboard that is. I even know what they ran that through. That's just one of the perks of being able to do this, I don't think it's a superpower. It's just retaining too much of that. As a lot of times my wife says, it's I'm a cornucopia of useless knowledge.
And two parts. One, that the superpower is your ability to have confidence in your vision. Like, to me, that's the superpower. Like, however you were raised, and, I know a little bit about it, but that your ability to be like, this is worthwhile, I'm going to follow this through. That's like a fucking, that is magical. Like, and people have it so they can have the 10,000 hours and then, but you add in having taste, you add in being able to do this, but then it's that piece there where you're like, this is worthwhile, I'm going to follow through on this. And that's like something that most people just don't foster in themselves in a way. And then the other part is that I do think we focused our brains, like your kid and my kid share a very similar thing in that they're like kind of endlessly, they do the same thing. And it's
it's on steroids compared to my childhood.
Yeah. And you and I focused on music and then our kids focus on something, but it's really just the way our brains are wired. Like we process very fast. We're sort of like ahead of the person that's talking before they're and so it's, we get
annoyingly.
Yeah. And so it's like, and there's an aspect of that, like, marry that with confidence, which is like what you have, which is the same confidence that allowed you to wear fucking six versions of snakeskin pants. Like that's the same confidence that, like, when I was a kid, I had a mullet and I just dreamed of leather pants. Like, and when you were a kid, you had a mullet and you wore leather pants. You know what I mean? It's like, there's a very different, and like, that's a really rad part of creative people that step to me into the world of kind of genius, is like that they have all these tools but then they're not afraid to sort of like confidently use them and take that step forward where everybody else might be at the doorway being like, I don't know, like this is kind of, and you're just like, what's up? And you go, and I can do it on stage. You do it on stage, but I do it on stage all the time. You know, I say shit in front of people that they'd be like, what is he, how did he say, you know, I'll just say shit. And people, it freaks them out because it's like, I'm like a special person. Like, I'm just sort of like, that's crazy. But when you did that, you were a real asshole, but I know what you meant by that. And it's just like, what?
Yeah.
And it's like, and this is, but we all have our confident places where we can do our thing. And yours happens to be in this fucking way that is really beneficial to my record, at least, you know, and everybody else's that you work on, but mine. And then listening to your shit, you sent me that the new record. And I was like, fucking crazy. Like, just from a conceptual standpoint, the way you think, the way that you execute, the way that you like everything works. I was saying, like, even when I have a vision for something and you get it and it's not my vision, it's so hard to back out of your vision because it's so well done. And, like, you just sort of are kind of like, you're like, well, this is pretty fucking awesome. And if this is like, I can't articulate what I want and this thing's great, it's like, I don't know how to even dismember this thing and take parts of it. Because it's like, it's so fully formed as like a concept.
Which can be some artist's nightmare if I come in with too hot with that, you know? That can be a nightmare for them because they're the one who, they back off immediately.
Well, and we had our shit, right? Like,
Of course.
Because it's like, because there's inevitably, you know, I'm good with jumping out of a plane, but like before I land, I'd like to talk about where we're landing. And I'd like to be like, hey, I think I want to move I don't think we should land there. Actually, I have a better idea. If we land over here, there's a
parachute instead.
There's like a leg. Yeah, totally. Like, will you, hey, swap for a second. And you're like, motherfucker, we're landing. And I'm like, No, dude, no. Trust me. We got to, and no, fuck you. Not trust me. We're landing like this. And that was when we really butted heads. That was it where I was like, no, we can land this thing in the water. And you're like, motherfucker, since we dropped out of this plane, we are landing on that field. And like, I'm not switching parachutes with you. I'm fucking having a good time. And so are you. Shut up. You know what I mean? Like,
the plane runs out of gas eventually.
That is well put.
it does not stay airborne forever. Yeah,
that shit is not going to keep circling. The fucking... Right.
And that goes back to the I think it was the Lou Adler quote, which JD always told me, which I love, and it works well for me, which is, a record's never done. You just have to stop making it.
Yeah,
and,
that one.
And that doesn't mean I'm like, fuck this record, I'm over it. It's more just like, and that's, it's a slippery slope because sometimes the artist will come back with, well, it's not over till it's over, or whatever Lenny Kravitz will tell you. Like, it's really just it's a push and pull dynamic, but you have to somehow keep people with their eye on the big trajectory, not like the little, because it starts eating people alive towards the end with the songwriting, the production, everything. It starts eating the artist alive towards the end because all of a sudden there's so many layers that get exposed and they go, oh shit, well, what if I change this and change that and did this and did that? And, you know, I just try to always go by the goosebump theory that if like something initially makes the hair on my arm stand up and it makes me smile or cry or whatever in a good way, then something's got to be right about it. You know, something's got to, and I've had that sucked out completely on so many records by the end of it, when people have just like, and they've some people, not you at all. I'm just saying some people have made records completely emotionless when they started out emotional, like really good.
Right.
And a lot of those people, those are the people that will never put their record out. They'll just sit there. And we didn't have that problem. We had COVID, is why we didn't get the record out for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was, if anything, we could have put that record out right after we got shut down, and it would have been 90% what it is now.
Yep.
But not saying that the things we went back and did and redid weren't great, because they were. And I learned valuable lessons in that myself every day, because I can't help it but be the guy that the plane's got to land. Let's go. But there are, you know, there are instances where I'm absolutely wrong. And there's only been maybe two. I'm just kidding.
Do you know, it's funny that for me, my most successful record was a record that I that I did the over, I kept being like, you're not exhausted, let's go. Right. And then all of a sudden I had a hit song like I'd never had in my life.
Yeah.
And it fit the criteria of like, yeah, this is how they did Thriller. This is how they did Hysteria. This is how they did all my favorite records, you know? And it's like, and there's just different ways of making records. And like, and so for me, surrendering at all is difficult in the end. I might fake surrender up until the end. And then I'll be like, hold on, I'm landing this in the lake. But the idea that what I learned from you and what I learned from this whole process is like so much of the magic occurs. And also because we're not in the time of Hysteria or Thriller, or you know what I mean? Like there just aren't budgets and there's not.
Those records took long because they could.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's that. And it's also they, you know, oh man, I'm sorry, my yacht schedule. I won't be back in the studio for 3 more months. Yeah. So when a record takes 2 years to make, they actually worked on it for 3 months total.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah.
But yes, I know your point.
Exactly. Yeah, and there is perspective is so important. The idea of like looking at something and then for me, like being able to go, oh no, I see it now. I just want to do this, this, and this. Like that's the way I write songs it really well. And so Butch and I coming together, there was an element of me like learning, like, all right, this is not the way. And I'm not the person who goes, well, I guess this is the way we're going to do it together. That's just not how I am. I'm not togetherness person, you know? And so like, so all of a sudden I had to come to the realization of like, oh, wait a second. I'm going to exhaust. I learned like I have to exhaust myself first before I even get there. And then I have to, and then at the same time, I have to, so if I do my due diligence and my homework prior to getting somewhere and I exhaust myself at the altar of that. And then when I arrive, I know what I know the terrain. I've spent time walking all the trails and it doesn't mean there's not magic, but I've exhausted all of my trails. And like, that has to be the end of that. And the idea being like, then I can surrender to like, all right, let's let magic happen. I feel comfortable enough in this situation because I'm not confident enough like Butch to drop into a situation. Butch can drop into a thing and play guitar with somebody and be like, fall upwards on his feet and be like, you know, that's just the way your musicality from the time that you've spent and your fucking innate ability allows you to do that. It's just not where I live. I live in like, I play Indigo Girls, not even Indigo Girls. Emily writes incredibly complex, but like I can do like G, C, you know, like I don't even know how to invert a fucking chord. And so for me, if I don't know what I'm doing, even at the beginning of that, and that what I've learned from the process with you and with JD is like, neither of you want to spend the time, neither of you should have to spend the time with me while I figure out what it is I'm doing. I have to figure that out before I even show up. And right. Then I show up and then we get to shoot the picture instead of like, hey, will you help me figure out who I am? And will you, it's like, no, who am I? I have to be convincing. And then when I show up, then you're at your best. That's utilizing humans at their best. It's like showing up and being like, I know who I am. Do you know who I am? Show me. Okay, that's great. Let's go. Instead of like, I'm not quite sure who I am. Like, will you help me figure that out? And like, this record took so long that there was a moment where Jonathan and I were like, singer songwriter, that's it. Butch, it's going to be great. Support it. Minimal. Great. And then we had so much time that I was like, man, I think we could do this better. I think we could do this better. I think we can get it better. And Butch was like, dude, come on. Like, you know, and it's like, and COVID made it, you know, so we couldn't, there was no push. It was just, it was what it was. And the result has been fucking incredible.
And the enemy is time. It can be, you know, giving time limits. And I mean, I grew up where I would do my homework 10 minutes before class, you know, when it was due. I wouldn't go home and do it because I was home practicing and playing music and whatever. And then I'd get up and do it last minute. But I'd always get it in and get it and get a decent grade because I worked good on deadlines. And I feel like anytime I've ever had too much time to work on a record, it meanders, you know, so does my brain, so does the heart. And I don't want that, you know, I don't want to have, I don't want to lose that excitement. You know, I mean, the records that we talk about that we love, you know, the ones you mentioned that took 2 years to make or whatever, but some of our favorite records are ones that were made in 4 days.
Well, in the moments on the records we really love were done in the moment. It's like, that's the other part is like Octang Baby, Acrobat was done in one take. You know what I mean? Or like, or one was done in fucking 15 minutes, but they waited around for, you know, the waiting is the hardest part. Thanks, Tom. You know what I mean?
Yes. And the, and Van Halen one was made in like 4 or 5 days, you know, it's like there's, and, you know, whatever, there's a million examples of that. But yeah, I feel like having, COVID was a good governor on being able to have too much revisitation.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's it for the latest episode of Songwriters on Process. Don't forget, you can find all of my interviews with over 200 songwriters on my Songwriters on Process website at songwritersonprocess.com, going all the way back to 2010. You can read them, watch them, or listen to them. So until next time, thanks for listening.